welcome back to It Takes Two with Amy Eiler, JJ Gordon. Don't forget to take KFGO with us wherever you go. You can download our app, you can stream us from KFGO.com, or just keep your dial tuned in to the Mighty 790 or 94.1 FM in the metro area. Nick Archuleta is with us from North Dakota United. Nick, some interesting news after the governor's press conference yesterday, huh?
Yeah, it's great to be with you, Amy and JJ. It was an interesting press conference, and I think that the decision to put these decisions about reopening in the hands of local leaders is a good one.
I was thinking the same thing, and Amy and I have had discussions on the show about how different Fargo public schools need to react than, let's say, Lisbon, and how every single school system is just drastically different. We're all going towards the same goal, but we're all drastically different, with the idea that the school system itself is going to have to be the one to put together a policy. How do we progress forward? Who needs to be involved in that decision making?
Well, everybody that's affected by education in a community should have some say in this. So I have been urging folks for the last month or so to make sure that we have teachers and education support professionals, community members, students at the table when these protocols and plans are being drafted, so that everybody has some confidence that these plans will, in fact, mitigate the risk as much as possible.
And Nick, it makes sense that you've been working on this for a month, but part of me wants to say it's July 15th already. There's a very short window now to put together something that I feel needs to be incredibly thoughtful before school starts.
Well, that's true, but it's not as if every district waited until they heard from the governor. In fact, the most conscientious administrators, I think, have been working on this in their own districts for some time. We've already seen, for example, that Grand Forks has already put forward their plan. So I think, though, with that said, those districts that waited, you're right, they're going to have to hustle. And it makes it a little bit more difficult to get all the input you're going to need in a short period of time.
What are the teachers saying that are talking to you at North Dakota United?
Amy, what they're telling me is that, and this is true nationally, I'm sure, that nobody wants to have in-person teaching resume more than teachers. Teachers know more than most people that this is a very important aspect to a student's life. But they want to do it, and they want to make sure that their students are safe, that their schools are safe, and that they are, those teachers with health, underlying health issues, are safe as well. So they're cautious.
Right. How do you feel about, and I don't mean to get personal, but Nick, you've been around school system and kids for a long time, and this is brand new territory, but How do you feel about sending kids back into the classroom this fall?
Personally, I would feel fine with it if I knew that the concerns that I have were going to be addressed.
Yeah.
And I think that's the way we're seeing it. I noticed the Fargo Public Schools poll came out. And the last question on that survey was, if today was the first day of school, I would prefer... And parents, their results were they would, less than 50% of them would prefer full-time in-person learning. And then there's the other options were a combination of in-person learning and online learning. And then the last choice was virtual learning only. So if in Fargo, 50% of the parents aren't quite there yet, that's understandable because they haven't seen the whole plan yet. In terms of staff, I noticed that it's less than 30% would prefer full-time in-person learning, with the majority of them, not quite 50%, wanting a combination of in-person learning and online learning, and then something less than 30% that would prefer virtual online learning only. So the results are still mixed, I think, in terms of what people are preferring.
Yeah.
And Nick, when I think about it, and I think about a hybrid, right? So partial physical in school learning, partial distance learning. The thing that worries me the most is we pulled off nothing short of a miracle this last spring by allowing students to stay home and continuing education. And we got those seniors through the graduation process, and we've got juniors who are now moving into their senior year, et cetera, kids moving into first grade. are we really ready for something like that? I just imagine that the syllabi will have to change completely and very drastically to accommodate partial in-school, partial distance.
Yeah, you know, that the executive order that closed the school last year, the governor had, I don't know if it was that executive order or one just immediately released just after that, but what that did was it waived the rule that you had to be in person in order to receive credit for your studies. So that made it possible for school districts to award credit for students who are learning at home, which is terrific. That is continuing because that will really add some flexibility to what schools can do. I don't know that, depending on where you're at in the state of North Dakota, if you're in a district with, say, one or two cases in your county, there's probably really no reason why you can't open up as usual. But when you're in a county like Burley or Cass that has seen some increasing numbers as of late, getting the physical distancing you need that the CDC requires is not going to be practical or possible. So you're going to have to either go with some sort of a form of a combination, a hybrid, if you will, where you're doing some of it in person, some of it virtually, and or simply virtually.
Nick, who should parents be reaching out to if they've got questions? I mean, should they be reaching out to state health officials to ask questions? Should they be reaching out to the governor's office? Should they be reaching out to their own district? Should they be reaching out to the principal of their school? Who's the one who might have some answers?
Well, I tell you what, the guidelines are up on the North Dakota Department of Public Instruction website. So the guidelines the governor talked about yesterday are there. I'm sure they're on the governor's website as well. But they should be talking with the administrators in their own schools. And if they're not already on a task force for reopening schools or a planning committee to reopen schools, they should ask to be there. I think everybody has something to contribute to this discussion. And I think that the forward-leaning school districts are going to seek out that opinions and what folks in the communities have to offer. And I think that's especially true for teachers and education support professionals. Their voices really do need to be heard at this time.
Nick Archuleta, North Dakota United, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate your time.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Amy and JJ. Have a great day.
You too. This is It Takes Two. We're going to hear from a teacher later on this hour. Dr. David Tack is going to join us again and get his perspective on what it could look like going forward. Of course, in Grand Forks, they have their plan, so we'll talk to him about that. Taking a look at Wall Street this hour, everything is in the green. NASDAQ is up 22, the Dow is up 183, and the S&P is up 23. Sarah Heinrich, how are ag markets looking?
We've been able to hold in the green, cattle making some really nice gains. Those numbers.
This is It Takes Two. Amy Eiler, J.J. Gordon here on the Mighty 790 KFGO. Dr. David Tack is joining us again. Dr. Tack, welcome back to KFGO Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me. Good to hear from you again.
He is an English teacher at Grand Forks Central, and we have called him now that we know what the guidelines to the schools are across the state. Of course, Governor Burgum said that schools can opt for in-person education this fall. We understand that Grand Forks has come out with their plan. You know what the local plan will be up there in Grand Forks, Dr. Tack.
Yeah, to a certain degree. You know, they've, as Mr. Archuleta was saying very well before me, Grand Forks has kind of been on the front end of a lot of this. As he was saying, and I can, although I'm not speaking for our district, I can speak with experience in this district, is that I'm very impressed with how the administrative team hasn't waited until yesterday to find out to start this process rolling. And when we talked, you know, what was it, about a month ago, a few weeks back here, a lot of those, my hypothetical scenarios were actually coming from these already possible plans that Grand Forks was throwing around. So, yeah, I mean, as Mr. Archuleta was saying, I'm lucky to be part of a district that really has been quite proactive on many, many different levels in trying to prepare as best you can for something that we've never, ever had to prepare for.
Dr. Tack, I'm curious about this. We're not too far off from school. It's closer than you'd expect. I know that the back-to-school sales are already in full swing. Is there anything that you personally have been vocal about saying, like, gosh, this would be a great way if we're going to be doing physical school that we should be encompassing and incorporating into our classrooms?
You know, right now, I think that we're just waiting to see. I mean, it's hard to plan for something, period, that you don't know. And I think that a lot of us teachers are just really, you know, we have to have our three-way plans for if we're in person, if we're in hybrid, or if we're totally online. So it's hard to totally commit one way or the other. But if we're fully in person, I think that one of the things that I see in my conversations with other professionals, not just here in Grand Forks, but in other communities, is I think we need to be safe. And I think that's just the main thing, safety for the kids, safety for the teachers, safety for the community. And I think that you could put a lot of things down in plan, but when you're dealing with people, what you have in paper is not what oftentimes, what, you know, what theory has to say is not always what plays out in practicality. And when I was a teacher educator, I'd say that all the time, where we could give you a lot of scenarios of what to do in all these classes. And then you show up to day one and the kids and the community and your colleagues can really create an entirely different scenario. So I think that's what it is. We're just really waiting to see. And I think that we're really watching anxiously as to what our different leaders have to say. And public education has always been that way. You know, you're bound by what the school board thinks and what the public thinks and what the policymakers think. And now we're adding what the scientific community thinks to that next bubble. And so we're used to trying to play ball with the other three. What is the public, the policy, and what does the school board have to say? But then now we're adding, what does the scientific community have to say? And that's really, really new for us. And that's not so, you know, do we have to have plexiglass and how often and when do we wear masks? And we have it on paper. But then what do we do if we're in a community where in school, this is what we dictate for X number of hours a day, and then they go home to an entirely different philosophy where they don't mask and they don't socially distance and they have a bunch of people. So, I mean, there's a lot of what ifs that we as teachers, as much as we absolutely want to get back into the classroom, are waiting anxiously to find out ourselves.
So, forgive me not knowing this, my uneducation on this. Do you know if you're going to be full-time in the classroom or out of the classroom now?
Again, I know that what I understand is that we have our three scenarios laid out for all three of them. And the plans for those have been laid out. And we did get a document as well laying out very specific expectations for what would be a phase one, a phase two, or a phase three reentry.
I got
what
you.
We're still waiting to hear is what exactly which one we're going to follow. And I think yesterday was a big part about it. But as Mr. Archuleta was saying, I mean, we have these plans ready to go. We just need to wait and understand which one of the plans we're going to follow yet.
Right.
I'm kind of curious about this, Dr. Tack. So I kind of asked Nick Archuleta a little bit about this too. So are you going to have to prepare multiple versions of your syllabus for what's going to go forward? And in that case, has anyone reached out? I mean, is there additional training that might take place for teachers, some online resources that previously you didn't have going forward, thinking this might be the new normal for us?
You know, again, I can speak for our district. We've had really, really good teacher support teams that have been really good about providing, you know, updates on that. But again, it's a lot of teacher, you know, for as far as like occasional district programs that might help us become a little bit more fluent with Google Classroom, which our district utilizes. Or here are some links to some national organizations that are putting together ways in which to be a more effective online educator. But as far as like all Grand Forks Public Schools employees must block off X amount of time to be for professional development, no, it's kind of more up to us. And I think that that's another hesitation as well. And again, by no fault of our district, I mean, that's a massive undertaking. And as well, it's further showing some of the, in theory, put them back in school, but in practice, I mean, financially, to bring these teachers back who aren't on contract for this mandatory training, and how much it costs to just have, I mean, this training isn't just free. I mean, to bring people in and to have that training costs money. So it's a financial commitment. And then As the districts, I'm sure themselves are waiting to better understand, are we going to be online? What's the case? I mean, you don't want to put that money in for something that isn't going to happen. I mean, there's a lot of what ifs that were coming to play. So I know a lot of my colleagues, for the most part, like most teachers do. I mean, there's a lot of own personal professional development taking place. You know, I've spent a lot of days looking up things on how to be a much more effective online teacher and what are some new ways in which I can connect with my students digitally if need be. But that really, really, really is going to be one of the challenges for the districts moving forward for that financial.
And let me ask you this question, Dr. Tack, which is something that I've been trying to rattle around in my brain. Here at the studio, we imposed a no physical guest policy for a while just because we wanted to make sure that the people who are coming into the studio and using it every day, I trust Amy 100% that she's taking care of herself outside of this building. Mm-hmm. That being said, it is almost impossible to do that with a school system, to say the only people who are going to be here are staff, students, and administration. Because inevitably, somebody's going to need to bring in a substitute teacher. Somebody is going to all of those things that go into place with that. Has there been any conversation about what's going to happen when somebody who's not in the building every day needs to have a presence there?
I think in theory, I think they say that we would like to limit that and make sure that people aren't sick or tested. But again, if nationally, what I just heard today on as I was reading I try to read 3 to 4 newspapers each day to try to stay up to date on what's going on. And pretty much what the idea is that to get a test, it's 7 to 10 days to know. So even in limiting, or if you take someone's test, I mean, one of the things they say is that the kids won't feel it, but that doesn't mean that they can't or be quote unquote as affected by it. But that doesn't mean they can't transmit it either. And what I've been reading and what I've been seeing still is saying that. And you're right. I mean, how do we screen that? And how do we make sure, you know, we'll give the kid a test, but wait, as the papers were saying, 7 to 10 days to get a result back. I mean, it's really dangerous, and that's dangerous for them. And as Mr. Archuleta was saying, you know, to just think that all kids go home to a quote-unquote traditional nuclear family, that's not true. I have a number of kids who live with grandparents or older parents or in different situations. And yeah, I mean, I could see where they could be concerned as well. I mean, it's tough. Like I said, a school isn't an enclosed community. We are part of the extended community, and what goes on in the extended community absolutely finds its way back into the school. So no matter how well we clean and sanitize and wear masks and all that, for the time that they're not in the school and they go elsewhere and engage in behaviors and practices that don't reflect maybe the best ways to stay safe and whatnot, it's tough. I mean, you can have all the Lysol in the world, and that will still come into the school, and you're right. And I don't know. I mean, in theory and on paper, there's a lot of ideas on what to do. But in practice, I think that's what a lot of teachers make them nervous. But we did do a teacher survey, and the vast majority agree that they feel comfortable going back. They feel within our district that for the most part at that time, that what's being done is the right things to do. So we want to be there and we'd like to do it, but you're right. There's still those uncertainties that change every day from what we learn.
I kind of am of the opinion of we are going to put the most responsibility we ever have onto students' heads this fall. And in a weird way, you know, parents pass the baton to the school during the school day, and the school is responsible for the health and well-being of that child while they are in the school's walls. But we had open campus at Fargo South. I'm sure you remember that because I came to class late on a regular basis. But I remember we used to pile in, you know, 7-8 people into a vehicle and drive and go get donuts during an off hour. And unless campuses decide that they're going to be closed and then you're going to be keeping kids now inside of other rooms and forced study halls, we're going to really put a lot of responsibility on the head of those kids. And I can't imagine, you know, I used to forget my assignment book, which you needed to get to the a bathroom pass. This year, that student is going to have to remember, okay, I've got this class online possibly at this time. I'm at school on this day, but I need to get this. what happens if I forgot something at school that I need on an off, on a virtual day? I just think that there's so much that we're going to be asking these kids to do that we need to absolutely cut them some slack and also take an active role in their education, whether you're the teacher, the parent, or the community member.
For sure. You know, and again, I could speak on our administrative staff and at Grand Forks Central, Mr. Strandell and his administrative team. And again, Dr. Brenner at the larger level and his administrative team. I mean, flexibility has been the name of the game since this spring. We need to be understand. We have to have a plan, but we need to understand that what's going on is all the unique things in our students' lives and the challenges have now been magnified. You know, where a kid may have been asked to help work in order to pay rent or to help, now might have to be leaned on even more. A kid who might be a part-time caregiver, like on the weekends for whatever reason, might now be the full-time caregiver. I mean, a lot of these challenges, you know, like you were mentioning too, by nature, we all are social beings. And school provides that nurturing environment socially. I mean, it's not just about Shakespeare and algebra. I mean, their interactions with each other and going out for lunch and those sort of things are just as vital as what they learn in the standards and benchmarks as well, too. And you're right. I mean, we can police it as much as we can, but I can't be there when 5 or 8 kids pile in their car to go to Red Pepper, you know, over lunch and don't practice that proper thing, you know, the proper guidelines that we have. I can't do the thing where if all of a sudden some kid tests positive and a parent doesn't want to report it because that means they can't play baseball or basketball or football or run on my cross country team. You know, there's certain things that you're right. The school as a community is never more apparent as it is right now, as we've always known that we need to lean on everybody. But now, especially during this time, it's a must. And I know we can do as much as we can. I think I said this before. You could have the Walt Disney Teacher of the Year right now in the classrooms, but we need that Walt Disney Community of the Year support outside of it. And it's hard. It really is for everybody.
Dr. Tack is with us. Do you believe it would be important to implement a mask mandate for schools if you're in person?
I think we have to reflect what the scientists are saying, and I don't disagree. One of the things that I've heard again discussed and talking about is that one of the ways in which to help, I guess for lack of a better term, stymie the spread of the COVID virus is proper ventilation. Well, just think about how many buildings are old buildings that for whatever reason have needed upgrades. I've been part of them. I've had friends in districts who have said they've taught in schools without any air conditioning because the referendums keep getting voted down and they say, it's all right. We went to school in a building like that. You can go to a school in a building like that. Well, right now, that's, you know, what was a matter of discomfort is now a matter of serious health issues. And if you've got these schools that don't have proper circulation, I mean, I know Grand Forks Central is a historical building. And as updated as it is, there's still parts about it. I mean, you talk to the custodians and they're like, yeah, I roll the dice every time I have to do something electrical in here sometimes because of the old wiring. And I mean, there's no guarantee. I think there's a lot of people that are going to those buildings that are saying, you're right, in the community it might be safe, but we lack that the proper conditions within the building that we could wear masks and clean and sanitize. But there's still a lot of things outside of our control unless we spend the money to upgrade the buildings by the time it starts. So to circle back around, yes, I do believe that's the case. And some of those smaller communities that might not see a spread now go to an older classroom that hasn't been updated or upgraded and has poor circulation and poor ventilation. It might have to be playing by a different set of rules that they haven't had to. And yeah, I think that that's just going to have to be a new normal, and it's it'll be difficult to maybe bring some people on board and change that philosophy in some communities that haven't necessarily quote unquote felt that need to do that or felt a little bit more safe.
Dr. David Tack, it is just always a wonderful conversation when you're involved. Thank you so much for giving some time to the KFGO listeners today. And there's a lot to unpack and think about. If you missed any part of this interview, we're going to podcast it at KFGO.com so you can hear all of these great comments and thoughts from an educator who's returning to the classroom this fall.
Thanks, Dr. Tack.
Yeah, well, yeah, thank you, Amy and JJ. Truly a pleasure.
How much money would you like to save just by doing something you're already